The Spokane Symphony has a concert pair coming up this weekend, Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. And there's so many stories to be told that we're going to start in on telling these stories. The we in question certainly include James Lowe. Good morning, James.
Morning, Ben.
And in a little bit, we'll bring in Inbal Sigev, the cellist who's involved. And so why don't we actually start right there? There's probably even several stories involved with why we have Inbal Sigev as the soloist on this concert.
There certainly are. Well, it starts with the composer, Anna Klein. Anna and I were students together at the same time at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, and I knew her then as a cellist. I was a couple of years ahead of her, graduated, and then after a few years started hearing her name as a composer, and she's now one of the world's greatest living composers, had a huge success, was composer in residence with the Chicago Symphony, has written for all, you know, many major orchestras. And I think she's really an amazing composer. So I've been performing her work for some time as well now. And I was sitting on a train journey not that long ago, and I saw, you know, Anna had a new piece out, a new recording, and I listened to it, and it hit me absolutely between the eyes. And I listened to it on a loop for about 3 days. And as it happened, we were in the final stages of programming this season, and a soloist had to move dates or had to move into another season. And I just said immediately, get on the phone to Inbal Sigev, see if we can get her here to do this piece. And she was available. So literally about 3 days before the brochure went to print, we got this nailed down, and I'm so happy we did.
Well, let's meet Inbal first, musically, the way we always should. And then we'll meet her personally. So we go to our studio, and she has her cellist in her hand, and she's going to play for us the Allemande from the first Bach suite. Thank you. Live from our studio, that was Inbal Segev, the cellist, who is the soloist with the Spokane Symphony this weekend, playing for us the Allemande from the first Bach cello suite. And so we'll enjoy opportunity to meet her on another level now that we've met her musically, and then especially to get really involved with this the creation and the execution of this piece by Anna Klein. So welcome to Spokane and to Spokane Public Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And I'm going to project a little bit here, because when you walked in, you commented that you hadn't been allowed to play in the hotel, and so you came in and you played a little Bach on the cello. Does that kind of set your day aright?
Yes, it does, especially on a day like today. It's a little gray, so I felt like I wanted a nice Bach to make me happy.
Good. Well, and it made us all happy. So thank you for that. And that kind of, even before we center on the Anna Klein piece, it seems like a nice time in history to be a cellist right now. Is there kind of a cello ascendancy, and there's a lot of good piece cellists are doing interesting things and good things, there's good pieces going, and tell me about your greater world.
Yeah, I think that it is a bit of a renaissance. You're right. There's a lot of repertoire, so much so that we are, you know, we have to almost choose. Like, we can't cover everything, just like pianists did for many, many centuries, or few centuries, rather. So I love commissioning, and I love working with living composers. So I feel like part of my reason for being on this earth is to help move that forward.
Have you always been that way? Have you had that tendency as you were growing up and finding your instrument and your voice and maturing? Have you had that interest in the outer world?
No. In fact, we used to poo-poo on new music. Yeah. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. I mean, since my student years in Yale, I joined the New Music New Haven group, which was playing a lot of new music. A lot of it was not very good, to be honest with you. And it's still a case where you have to really sift through a lot of stuff to find what speaks to you.
Yeah. Well, that brings us then to Anna Klein and the creation of this piece.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to be introduced to Anna through Marin Alsop. We were just talking about it with David. And she sort of has this, sixth sense, and she knew that we'll hit it off, and we did. So Anna is a gentle soul, I like to say, and I really love her melodies. She writes tonally, and yet it's very fresh, really modern writing. And so on a first hearing, her pieces are very approachable, and I love that. And yet you don't get sick of them as you play them. So I've played this concerto many times now, and I just love it. I really, really think it's a wonderful piece. I agree.
Let's bring James back into this, because you were already saying how you were struck immediately by it. So respond a little bit to a couple things Inbal was saying there.
Well, I mean, as I say, I've known Anna for a long time, probably more than 25 years, which when I think about it is slightly horrifying. I think for me, so often with contemporary music, it's so hard, I think, for a composer to find a voice that is really emotional and connects directly with people, and for it not to sound like film music. And Anna does this in this most fantastic way, that the way she has her colors. And as Inbal says, there's also, it's a very modern piece as well. It doesn't pull its punches. I genuinely think it's one of the best pieces I've heard in the last that's come out of the last 50 years of music. I mean, I really do think so. And it's already establishing itself, thanks to Inbal, in the cello repertoire. I mean, you're performing it. I looked at your schedule. You're performing everywhere. And Eckhart Proy is performing it with you later in the season. So he's flying in Sunday morning to hear us perform it. So, I mean, it's really exciting for me when a piece comes in and not only is not just played once, but suddenly takes wing and really becomes a new addition to the repertoire. And I think this piece has done that remarkably quickly.
Yeah. And it's called Dance. Is that Do we need a note of that title? Does that inform how we approach it? Is it uniquely rhythmic because of the title, or what does that have to do with anything?
I think it's a little misleading. I think it has to do with the poem more, and the poem has a more philosophical rather than actually dance. But it is a dance in a different sense to me. I mean, I'm totally projecting my own interpretation, but dance when you're broken open, it doesn't really... It conjures, for me, maybe a timely response, although it was written in the 12th century, 13th century, to what just happened in the last 2 years with the pandemic. We were all broken open, and dance in the middle of fighting. We had a lot of fights in the world, and finally dance when you're completely free, and which is something to aspire to. And can we really be free, completely free?
Is that a sense of movements that are within the piece? Is it a multi-movement piece with pauses between movements?
Yes. So there's five movements. You know, I recently played it with a dance troupe, and we didn't do any breaks between them, so they could be continually perceived as well. But I like having some time between certain movements, and others we play straight.
And so you say you've played a lot, and it just is holding up for you. Are you the exclusive? Do you have exclusive rights to play it still at this point because you commissioned it?
I do still. I think next season it's open. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on this, but I think Boosie, you can get the music through Boosie, and yeah.
Yeah, and so then the cellist will be lining up to learn it from you or something.
I hope so.
Something like that. And that, you know, it's really a lovely success story because, as you've already alluded to, and again, James can come in on this, it's so much the opposite that one hears it once, or you commission it and it's a big deal and you get a lot of press about it and it gets its obligatory three performances with three orchestras and then we never hear it again.
So. Yeah, and I think it's a testament to the piece because it's happened very organically. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not something that has been pushed. I mean, Boosie and Hawkes are a great publisher and they're very good at getting their work out there. But certainly, I mean, my impression is that it's happened really, that the piece has taken wing on its own. Because it is such I think, as Inbal just said, it really, right now, it's so... fits with how we're all feeling, and I think it speaks to what we've all lived through. I think that there's a number of factors, and I think it's great. I mean, not least the fantastic recording that Inbal made with Marin, and I think it's had 5 million plays. I heard on
we are 50,000 shy of 6 million, so almost there.
Yeah. So that's the wonderful, amazing thing that happened in your life, and we. You know, don't say happen too lightly, because certainly you were an integral part of that creation. How much were you a part of the creation in the gestation of this piece?
So actually, I was surprised. A lot of works that I commission, I get them finished and printed almost. So some composers, there will be a back and forth. But with Anna, it was really, she's very generous that way. And she trusted me to write some ornamentation inside and add some flourish and some octaves, which, of course, I regret now. Much harder. I made it much harder on myself. But she liked some of the things I suggested, some not. So I'm very, very proud of what she did take in and happy about that. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one wonderful light in your life, and I'm kind of aware that you've done some other things, and you have some ideas in cello playing and physicality of cello playing and various things. What are some of the other interesting lights to your life?
So right now, besides the commissioning, I also have a series on YouTube where I teach. I talk about the, for example, all the Bach movements. All 36 of them in depth, short kind of bite-sized lessons, and they're very popular as well. I'm playing a lot of chamber music, so I'm touring with the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Mm. We're doing a whole country tour in December, very excited about. But a lot of it is the commissioning right now, and recording and filming, which is sort of a new way of recording these days. You kind of always videotaped too. It's just a new.
Yeah. Okay. So I've seen the video of the Blot Prayer, in which you're out in a field and the wind is blowing. So you weren't in front of a green screen when you were doing that. I'm gonna make this like asking a magician to give up their secrets, and yet it's this gorgeous sound. I assume that wasn't the audio you had done in a studio. Right?
Yes, absolutely. And I sometimes like very funny comments, like people are like, she's not really playing on the roof. Of course I'm not. Hello. Yeah. I mean, 99% of the videos you see on YouTube are Milli Vanilli style. I mean, it's just a fact. So actually, all the videos I'm shooting in the studio now are shot in real time. But they're going to be edited later, but they're going to be using the film that went exactly when I was actually producing the sound. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think that looks more authentic, but it requires, I think, a certain, you know, you give up some sort of concentration in a studio, because when you have a cameraman in front of you, it's just not the same.
Sure, yeah. And how does any of that translate to what the symphony is doing right now by virtue of filming the concerts? I mean, of course, there was the pandemic version you did, but now the actual filming of the concerts and putting them out. What is or isn't different?
Well, we're very lucky in that we have Don Hamilton and Hamilton Studio doing all our video and production for us. And it is amazing to me, really, how much he can get without you even noticing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he has, I think it's now 15 cameras he's using.
Wow.
And the majority of them are GoPros. So they're just these little kind of matchbox-sized things that sit on a stalk, and they just look like a music stand to the audience. And for us, you know, we forget about, one of the players said to me, he said, I was watching the thing, and they said, I wish I'd remembered there was a camera on me.
Oh, man, pick your nose.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, the Hannah Sander, who's the editor for that series, is really an astonishing talent. And so the product that we get out is really fantastic. So I'm really proud of that work, and I'm really grateful to Don and his team for making that happen. But I think it is an important tool now for orchestras, because I think people need to feel ownership and closeness. And I think it's so easy when you hear a symphony orchestra, because there's nobody singing, nobody producing noise from their body. It's easy to think of it as something kind of mechanical and distant. And I think to be in and to see people and to see the concentration and to see those little human moments, like, you know, I love it when I watch a video of an orchestra and you see a solo and this person sitting next to them just very gently kind of rubs their knee as a little bit of saying, well done, well done. I love those little intimate moments, those glimpses inside the orchestra. So I think this is a really important tool for us, and humanizing the symphony orchestra a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, let's go on and talk about the rest of the concert. I have to save time for the last 20 minutes of this hour because we have this wonderful interview with Anna Klein that Jim produced, and she's going to tell other sides of this very same story. So, you know, the marketing name, and it's pretty good, points north from the Hebrides to a Russian composer to a Finnish composer, and so talk a little bit about the rest of the concert.
Well, I put this together. I mean, the northern connection is that Anna and I studied at Edinburgh together, so that's how Anna fits in.
There,
although actually, I would say this piece is much more of a southern piece, really. But we'll put that aside for the moment. But that was my excuse for getting Anna in this program. So it's built around this idea. You know, I always think it's very easy to love the South. You know, you go to Italy and the food is great and it's warm and it's beautiful and you sit outside and you have a glass of wine. It's wonderful. And then we live in the North, where it's like today, you know, it's raining and cold and grey. But there's also a beauty in that. And I think people in Spokane understand that. Mm. But certainly anyone who's here in November has not gone South. Mm. So I think this is exploring the Northern soul a little bit. Obviously, we start with the Mendelssohn Hebrides Overture, and of course, a great classic. And, you know, kind of funny for me, my wife, actually, and her parents were on vacation last time I was here, in the Hebrides. So, and she took a video of Fingal's Cave.
Of course.
But of course, Mendelssohn apparently never actually really saw Fingal's Cave, because he was too busy being ill on the boat because it was such a rough sea. And I think you also hear that in his piece. You know, there's a bit where there's really a storm whips up. But there's that. It's not an austere piece. It's a really beautiful piece. But I think he really captures that kind of that Hebridean, that slightly tumultuous part of that wild corner of the world. And then on the other end, we have Sibelius' Fifth Symphony, which is, of course, one of the great masterworks, inspired famously by a flock of swans flying overhead and the horns, as you know, and get the best bit of the entire symphony. And, you know, I was music director for an orchestra in Finland for a long time and studied with a Finnish teacher. And I love, you know, the Finns have a very unique personality and a very different approach. And that comes so clearly through Sibelius's music. And I just love it. And I love how the very end of the symphony, it almost pulls apart. It falls into this crisis that you think is just going to dissolve into total chaos and atonality. And then it turns and coalesces back and ends in this glorious moment. And, you know, there's this wonderful Finnish word, sisu, which is determination. And really, like, when you're walking through an ice storm and the snow is blowing in your face, you just keep on going. And I think that moment for me captures this very Finnish element of sisu so well. I just love this music, and it really resonates with me, and I think it will resonate certainly to the people of Spokane.
And then there's Trepanning, and we heard that one Trepanning piece right before the hour, but you have this princess. What about this princess? The distant princess.
Yeah. So this is a piece. I got a phone call late one night from a horn player friend of mine, very excited, and she said, "I've just heard this piece on the radio. I've never come across this composer before. You've got to play it." So I listened to it, and now this is the second time I've performed it. And it's a beautiful piece. The prelude that we're playing is, the piece you played is a little bit later, I think. He's going more in the Stravinsky direction. This is more on the Tchaikovsky end of things. And it just has this most beautiful, beautiful melody and drama. And it's just a great gem. It's only a little piece, only a few minutes long. But it's one of those little undiscovered things that occasionally come your way. And I love to do these romantic pieces that have maybe fallen out of the repertoire and revive them a little bit.
Yeah, because there's so much great music that aren't in the top five, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I because I'm a music nerd, I spend a lot of time kind of poking around in catalogues of music and coming across composers' names I've never heard of and pieces that I don't know and listening to them and you know, like with contemporary music, there's sometimes a reason why 19th century works have kind of disappeared. And you listen to them and think, okay, I can see why that didn't take off. But occasionally you'll come across a piece like this. Yeah. And then it's really exciting to kind of bring it out and polish it up.
And Inbal, you're nodding to some of that, because have you also discovered some lesser known pieces that aren't in the mainstream that have been a real delight?
I used to play with this group called the Jupiter Chamber Players, and they always found those quirky little things. We used to laugh. It was the Brahms' doorman. Of course, he didn't have a doorman, but he wrote it. Or some uncle of, you know, third cousin of Haydn. And, you know, sometimes you get a gem there. You know, I can't... somebody just told me about a great Baroque piece, which, of course, I'm blanking on the name. Solo Baroque that was written for solo cello, written shortly after Bach. And if I remember it, I will tell you, but I don't.
But there are these lovely things from the past.
Yes.
To be found. Certainly, Inbal, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And as always, James, we'll look forward to your next visit. We'll probably be around New Year's Day or something like that.
Yeah.
So somewhere close to there, New Year's Eve.